A great way to also recruit is called snowball sampling. So if you speak to someone who's got a lot of great insights, you can ask them at the end of the interview, is there anyone from your network who you can recommend me speaking to? And then hopefully they can do a bit of an introduction. So they'll be a lot more likely to go through with the testing and want to participate because it's also coming from like a friend and not just a random cold call. You've reached Hotline Design Podcast. How may we help you? And welcome back to Hotline Design Podcast. In this week's episode, we're talking all about moderated user testing. What is it? Our experiences and useful tips on how to make your moderated user testing the best it can be. So ladies, I have to know, how have your weeks been?
Hey, Lauren. Lovely to see you. I feel like we haven't recorded in a while. So yeah, here we are. In terms of my week, it's been absolutely lovely. I took my I took a week off work because I just finished my last project. So tomorrow, actually, I am going to start a new project, but I wanted a little bit of a space in between. So I went home and I spent a little bit of time with my mama, and that was really, really lovely. We had an amazing coffee shop downstairs. So every morning was just how I envision the most beautiful life I could lead started. Because, we had a coffee shop downstairs and we would get ready, we would go get some coffee, and then we would go about our day. And somehow it was just, it hit differently than when you make a coffee at home. And the fact that it was just downstairs and you don't have to like walk 10 minutes or something, it was really lovely. So that was my week. I basically chilled with my mom. It was great. How about you?
Oh, that's so lovely and super wholesome. And yeah, that makes me miss my family too, actually. But really exciting news, I am going home for a bit. So hopefully I'll be able to hang out with my family too. I'm really looking forward to that. So actually quite a few things have happened recently, but I will share some more updates to come. But generally, I've just been going into the office once to twice a week. It's been so nice to see people in and outside of work. And in London, sometimes I feel like things are almost back to normal, like kind of pre-pandemic levels. And yeah, it's just been like really nice seeing people again. And on the work front, I've been trying to put together some Figma upskilling sessions for friends at work. And also just planning my holidays since the days are longer now. I think we're generally easing into spring. So really looking forward to that. And what about you, Lauren?
Yeah, so it's been like a little hectic these past few weeks. So my partner and I are moving flats, but fortunately we're moving flats in the same building into a flat that has the exact same layout. So I haven't actually been like packing that much because I'm like, oh, you simply just pick up like a drawer and then you just bring it down. We're moving down like a floor and then you just recreate it. So I found that to be like a bit challenging when you don't need to like pack to get boxes fit in a van, but you just need to physically get all the stuff out. Like I wish I could just like control C, control V my flat into another one. So that's been going on. And then I also went into work for the first time in 2 years, which was very exciting. I got full-fledged suited and booted, went to the client office, had a ball, but I realized I've like lost a lot of skills during the pandemic. So if I hear people talking around me, like it's like I'm right there in their conversation. I used to think about like the before times when we were all hot desking in office and like everyone was on a separate call and I could totally like tune them out, but now I can't. But it was just so nice to see the team and to know that they're real people and not just like VR. So absolutely lovely.
Well, that I almost kind of like, if I have to go into the office, I cross that day off because I feel like I'm not going to be productive at all because of everyone talking around me.
It's like you're not really like hard head down work productive, but you are in terms of like meetings and getting to know team members and like networking to find more information that would be helpful for your project. But it's completely a different type of productivity that I don't think is associated with like head down work.
Yeah, I love that reframing actually. it's much more useful than me being like, I'm not productive.
But yeah, I get that. I think it's really nice to have a change of environment, because I feel like at points during the pandemic, I think just continuously working in at home hasn't always been the most productive for me. So I do like going into the office and switching it up. But when you do see a lot of other people as well, sometimes, admittedly, I get a bit cranky, kind of like, just leave me alone, I want to do my work. And I get super antisocial because I just listen to music and tune people out. But I think like what I've learned is I try and go in on Fridays, because that's when fewest people are going to be in the office. So if you just want to switch up your environment but get some focused work time in, yeah, like that's just kind of what I do, pick days where people don't go in.
Yeah, I like that a lot and can totally relate to the feeling like you're antisocial, because yeah, I even before the pandemic I just put my headphones on and tuned everyone out.
And speaking of something we'll never tune out, this week's episode is focused on user testing, and specifically moderated user testing, because user testing is increasingly a really crucial part of your overall product development process. And this is the first in a two-part series on how to run user or usability testing. And today we're talking about moderated user testing. As the name suggests, so moderated, this is when user testing is overseen by a facilitator or a moderator who can guide the participant through the prototype or scenario being tested and ask follow-up questions accordingly. And there are several different types of moderated user testing, which you might have heard of before. So there's things like guerrilla usability testing, where you basically bring a prototype to general members of the public and test it with them. There's also card sorting, when you have lots of different things you want to include in the product and are just trying to find out the best way to organize them or come up with a good information architecture. And there's also things like lab testing, which is more of a quantitative form of usability testing, when you actually start capturing metrics and how long people take to do certain tasks. All of these different types of user testing rely on having a moderator present.
In the realms of moderated user testing, we hear a lot about the terms user testing and usability testing thrown around a lot. So I was hoping to clarify the two terms and what they both mean to you.
So that's a really interesting question. And to be perfectly honest, I never really thought about the difference between the two terms. I always thought they were just interchangeable, and I certainly use them interchangeably. But when just trying to do a bit more research, I found this article by Hotjar, and I feel quite validated, because they write in that article that, you know, the difference between usability testing and user testing is confusing to developers, project managers, and even UX designers. I think my general take on it is that user testing is maybe a bit more broad, whereas usability testing is focused on uncovering specific usability problems. What do you both think?
I'm in a slightly confused boat myself, I think. I agree with you, like I used to use them interchangeably. And I remember when preparing for this episode, I just Googled moderated user testing. And the first thing that came up that wasn't an ad was moderated usability testing. So I think it's kind of a general thing that people use them interchangeably. With that said, I remember when we discussed this off mic, I was going to say off camera, Lauren was mentioning how, oh, is user testing a bit of an umbrella term, and is usability kind of something under it? And I feel like maybe like that explanation makes a bit more sense to me, because usability can be quite specific, but with user testing, maybe you can actually test. With usability, it's kind of like, oh, does this button, is this button obvious for people? Can they click it? Can they use it? But with user testing, maybe you can also see, would people enjoy this feature? Would they use this feature? And things like that are not necessarily related to usability, but it's still testing with users. But I recognize that I have formed this opinion in the past few hours when we were discussing about it. But it's just kind of like what right now makes the most sense to me. I still think in day-to-day life, I will still catch myself using them interchangeably.
Yeah, I feel like those are both really great answers. I think it might be something similar to, you know, like the terms product designer or UX designer, where like they kind of get used interchangeably, but some people have like strong opinions on how they differ or a specific definition for each one. But yeah, as was mentioned, I think of user testing more of the umbrella, and then usability testing is specifically and more tangibly how a user goes about interacting and using the product. But I completely agree with what you both said, and especially Lavinia, your point about how user testing might be more about the appetite and the feeling over the interaction specifically.
Yeah, I think we're all kind of on the same page. But semantics aside, when and why would you usually choose to do moderated user testing, or more specifically, usability testing?
Yeah, so this is a good question, because we're also going to be doing a second part on unmoderated user testing. And if we were to compare the two, the key benefit of moderated user testing is that it allows for a high level of interaction between the facilitator and the participant. So the facilitator always has the opportunity to ask any follow-up questions to the participant to dig deeper and understand why people are carrying out certain actions. And this wouldn't always be possible with unmoderated user testing.
Yeah, and I think it's especially helpful when you're in the early stages of your design project and you're trying to really get your head around if there are any like main or glaring usability problems. I think it's really important in iterative design. So you can really just test with like a low to medium fidelity prototype or even like a pen and paper sketch as well to make sure that you've got the right workflow before you spend too much energy. It's just a great way to kind of catch some of those problems that if you didn't address early on would really become some showstoppers later on in the process.
But I also think it's also really good when you have a complex user flow. So that might need a little bit of stage setting beforehand. You might need to give the user some context before they start using it. Because of the complexity of the flow, maybe it's not just like a simple login or something that they're used to. So yeah, I think having that face-to-face interaction helps a lot if the flow is a bit more complex.
Yeah, I think that's a great one actually. And speaking about complexity too, sometimes if you give participants like a really complicated task, they might think aloud and kind of take you through their thought process, but then you can also pick up on other cues, non-verbal cues like body language. You know, they might frown or they might shrug. And if they're done in person as well, it can be a bit easier to read some of these nonverbal cues. And so moderated user testing is helpful for this, because when you have a moderator in the room, they can pick up these little signals and ask follow-up questions as well to participants and just keep asking why. Or if they see that a participant is like confused or stuck on a certain action, they can probe for more information. And generally, if you have a really good moderator in the room, and when done well, it leads to a natural conversation with your participants and your customers. And it's just a good opportunity to get some really candid feedback from the participant.
And I think what you mentioned, like about follow-up questions and stuff like that, it's also really cool when it almost leads you into kind of questions that you wouldn't have even thought about before you entered the room. Mm-hmm. Because maybe the user has given you some thoughts, ideas, and pointers, and you kind of come out being like, oh, I never thought of that. It almost feels like co-designing at times that, yeah, you wouldn't get with unmoderated.
That's why I love semi-structured interviews, because I almost conceptually don't think you could have a fully structured interview, and you gain so much more by having those opportunities for people to add in things that go like quote unquote off the script. And you can find a lot more opportunities and pain points that way.
Totally.
And what do you ladies find are some of the downsides of moderated user testing?
I think for me, one of the biggest one is the amount of almost admin it comes with. It's a very planning intensive type of testing. And I think it definitely reaps its rewards once you've done all that work. So I don't necessarily think you shouldn't do it because it takes so much planning. But I think that's one of the downsides. It's not the type of thing where you have 1 week, you haven't planned anything, and you're able to kind of like on Monday start planning, take people and kind of finish it by Friday with analysis and everything else. Like, I think you could maybe with unmoderated. I think it needs a lot more, yeah, planning. And with that, it also needs some facilitation experience. When you don't necessarily have experience with user testing, I think you can still do a very good job if it's unmoderated, because you have the time to plan through every question and scenario and stuff like that. But when it is moderated, you need to know how to guide the user and have that facilitation experience that might not be needed for unmoderated.
Yeah, definitely. Especially if you run moderated user tests in person, which you might want to do for the first couple of times you run moderated user tests, it does involve quite a high degree of logistical coordination. And, you know, there's lots of things you kind of need to sort through, like consent forms, making sure that participants can turn up, at a set like time or a set slot. But I think the alternative to that is, you know, running a remote moderated test, which probably is kind of still the most viable way because of the pandemic. And yeah, I think that's probably the main thing around like moderated user tests, like just having to organize everything, also find like a trained facilitator who can ask the right questions.
For sure.
Exactly. Another kind of downside I found is it can be quite costly. Usually you need to kind of have some incentive for people to participate or some way to reward them for their time. So, you know, I've been on projects where we just have stacks on stacks of Amazon gift cards. Most recently, I was on a project where we gave participants the option of either they could get charity points, so to kind of give to a charity of their choice, or massage points. I don't know. I've never given away like massage points. I don't even like really fully like know what they are, but I found that to be quite funny to ask people if they want to give to charity or if they want like massage points.
What did they choose?
They can redeem towards a massage. What's that?
What did they choose?
Yeah, so there was like a split, and then someone was like, can I gift someone else like massage points? And I was like, I don't know. I don't really understand this system. Someone on the client side was helping me to like make sure people got all their various points. So, and I was also like, I'm also not like offering you a massage at the end, like me myself at the end of this research session. So that was kind of funny. Also, yeah, along with the point of having an experienced facilitator, it's really important that you've got someone that does not bias the participant. So making sure that they feel comfortable to share feedback, no matter how negative or positive, is really foundational to ensuring that people aren't just answering because they think it's the answer you want to hear, or that like with your eyes, you're not kind of like leading them to like the next step in the prototype or giving them too many hints where it's less about the actual findings and more about how you've steered them.
Or like scolding them, being like, no, you shouldn't have pressed that button.
Sure.
You idiot. No massage points for you. Your shoulders will remain sore.
Oh, God. I don't know like how many tests you would have to disqualify if that was the level of moderation involved. But yeah, that's not the point. So that's quite interesting then. So what would you say are your experiences with planning or running moderated user tests?
I actually realized just now that I only started doing user testing since the pandemic. Therefore, I have never done a face-to-face user testing session. And I would absolutely love to, because I think it adds another kind of, I don't know, element of information, of data. You can definitely get people's reactions and body language from the screen, but it's not probably not the same as in person. So yeah, my first experience was I was asked to join a project for only 2 weeks where I needed to improve actually the usability of a product that they already created. So I started the first week, I did loads of interviews with people to ask them how they use it, what works for them, what doesn't work for them, basically just done interviews. And then the second week, by the kind of like midweek of the first week, I've kind of done some changes to the interface. And then in the second week, I did some user testing. And based on that feedback, I changed some things and ended the project. It was quite quick, but it helped me immensely in kind of future experiences where things weren't as quick and a lot more planned. But yeah, it was good to have kind of like a low stakes first project to do some user testing with. And I think I've done it in almost every single project since. Whenever we do kind of like a mid-fidelity prototype, it's quite important to us to take it through some sort of user testing. I've done both moderated and unmoderated, and yeah, I don't know. I think that's my experience. What about you?
Yeah, so I've done a lot of like semi-structured interviews over the years, and especially like my love of semi-structured, because you never know what could pop up. So I start off, yeah, first doing those, even like in university, which is great because, yeah, I have had the opportunity to do them not only like with people face to face, but sometimes even like in their homes, which I just have an aside where I feel like you don't truly know someone until you've seen like their home. It can just give you like so many more cues about like the type of person they are. And then, yeah, I've done a lot of kind of think aloud walkthroughs of prototypes. And in my experience, when you're making your research plan, I find that you really need to allow for a lot of time for scheduling. Like, it's crazy. You really think you could get 10 interviews done in a week, but by the time you try to like factor in an hour long block in everyone's schedule, like honestly, that week could have ballooned to about 3 weeks. And it's also really important to spend a lot of time on the kind of inclusion and exclusion criteria, because I've had some instances where I've even sent out like a screener survey to get our participants recruited. And then I've been, you know, in the research session reading off the disclaimer kind of statement that usually I like memorize by heart by the end because I've just said it so many times. And I've had people be like, oh, actually, like, I don't really think I'm relevant for this research or this testing. And fortunately, they say it there before we're about to, you know, go into 15 minutes of like clicking through prototypes and getting feedback. But yeah, just really make sure, like, because those sessions are quite like intensive in terms of the facilitation and the time commitment. So really do make sure you're getting the right participants. Yeah, and overall, that's been my experience. How about you, Yusen?
On my end, I've done user testing to varying degrees. At the start, I'm just trying to think, when I first ran a user test, it just wasn't very like structured or planned out. And it's only recently that I think I've become a lot more methodical in the way I approach usability testing. And maybe this isn't exactly like, the answer that people want to hear. But I think when I first started with user testing, it was like super quick and dirty, had a prototype, had a few questions in mind that I wanted to ask. And I just kind of took people through the prototype and I allowed them to kind of play around with it and click through it. And, you know, ask follow-up questions, like noted down some observations. But I don't think it was very like streamlined or planned out. I certainly didn't do anything like writing a whole like research brief, which is definitely best practice and what you should try and do. And most recently, on my most recent project, I think my team as a whole has been a lot more rigorous in the way we approach usability testing. So I had the chance to draft an entire research brief, just kind of outline the research objectives, the participant screeners, like who we're looking for. On this project, because the types of users we're testing with is so specialized, we actually have to go through an agency to recruit participants. So actually, Lauren, when you said, you know, like think about the amount of logistics involved in recruiting people, if it's an option and you're dealing with a highly specialized audience, sometimes it might be an option to work with an external agency because they can kind of help you source the participants you need. So I think like your answer as well, actually, Lauren, made me think a lot about some of the potential issues with running moderator ESA tests, like on time and on budget. Sometimes recruitment is just quite a tough one to handle. So I would say that my experience with running moderator ESA tests has been quite varied in the past. You know, I just kind of do it quite ad hoc and, you know, just run it with a small group of users up to about 5 people, because that's generally seen as like the magic number, especially in qualitative studies. But yeah, more recently, just been trying to adopt a more robust approach. And when I do run more moderated user tests, I will have a better update.
I love the agency point, because what I found in the recent years is it used to be hard to get buy-in to do any kind of user testing. That was the main issue we were having when wanting to do any user testing. But I found that in the recent years, that isn't the problem anymore. People want us to do user testing, but recruitment always kind of stabs us in the back somehow. Like, there's always an issue with recruitment, and that is kind of like the biggest barrier to conducting user testing recently. So the agency points would kind of save us so much time, stress, even budgets. I know we would probably have to pay the agency, but I think we kind of sometimes waste so many days trying to recruit people that it would actually make up in the budget. So I think I'm gonna raise the agency point in future projects, because it's always the most stressful bit for me, the recruitment.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, and realize maybe this is a bit of a tangent as well, but what sorts of platforms do you normally use for moderated user testing? Because I think with places like usertesting.com or, you know, like UserZoom, sometimes they do help you with participant recruitment as well. So that's kind of inbuilt into the plan like you're using or your company's using. But I'm just trying to rack my brain. In the past, because I was designing an internal product, it was easy for me to find people because it's just like employees in my client organization. But yeah, I guess when you are testing like a consumer-facing product, you might think about any existing networks that you have, or like maybe reaching out to customer success teams could be a good way to like find participants.
Yeah, a great way to also recruit is called snowball sampling. So if you speak to someone who's got a lot of great insights, you could ask them at the end of the interview, is there anyone from your network who you can recommend me speaking to? And then hopefully they can do a bit of an introduction. Mm-hmm. So they'll be a lot more likely to go through with the testing and want to participate, because it's also coming from like a friend and not just a random cold call from a researcher.
Yeah, sure.
Definitely. I think that adds to your point before, though, where like it snowballs from 1 week to 3 weeks, because usually you can't just say, oh, give me someone from your network and that person would be available the next day. It's usually like next week or yeah.
And then there's also the added complication of like a lot of organizations have like meeting free like Mondays or Fridays, so that's just another thing to keep in mind, that while I find doing things kind of virtually can be easier because you don't have to like travel places and you just have to join like a Zoom call or Teams meeting, like it can be made more difficult by these kind of meeting free days.
Yeah, which I love. Don't take them away, please.
Yeah. And speaking of things we love, we've got a Hotline Design hotline caller this week.
Hi, Hotline Design hotline. I'm Louise, a longtime listener and first time caller. I'm hoping you can help me with something. I am rather new to moderated user testing, and I was hoping you could outline the steps in getting a moderated user test with a prototype up and running. Thanks, Hotline.
So thanks so much for calling in, Louise, and really, really great question. So just to outline some of the steps. So really for moderated user testing, we've got step one, which is to write your user testing brief or research plan, and it should define the goals of your study, your research objectives, and the participants you'd like to recruit. This is really great. You're kind of plan on a page to understand the wider direction and how you're going to get there. And then for step two, it's really important to identify the tasks that you want participants to carry out and kind of craft this into your user testing session guide. So like having specific test scenarios, having those kind of questions, even some prompts under those if they don't kind of gel with that first question that you asked. So make it really kind of specific and realistic. So you might want to put, for example, a task that says you're planning a holiday trip from London to Paris this weekend, find the best possible prices for your air tickets. So you can make the situations like quite broad. But then I would say for the follow-up questions, if you want to dig into more detail, it's a great place to do that. And then step three, and perhaps the hardest, recruit your users. So this should be informed by your inclusion and exclusion criteria. And, you know, if you got the coins, you might want to work with a recruitment agency. Also, again, snowball sampling. If you're having a challenge, you can leverage the networks of people you've already interviewed. But regardless, hopefully your sample size is large enough and diverse so that you kind of get a good mix of answers.
Love it. I think one of the next steps after you put together your questionnaire or your user research plan, a good way to make sure that you didn't miss anything or all the questions are related to the goals of your user testing sessions are to conduct a little bit of a pilot study within your own team. This is incredibly helpful from my experience because sometimes you are so kind of focused on what you're doing and you're kind of like you looked at it a million times and you probably realize that you've forgotten something super small but quite important, or you might realize that some of the questions aren't worded in a very clear way. So teammates are really, really helpful in kind of doing a first pass and ensuring that the users will actually understand the questions and you would kind of achieve your goals with user testing. And then step five is the most kind of meaty part and probably the most exciting part when it's just actually running the test. We would say that here it's super, super important to almost like set the scene, make sure that the user is comfortable, greet the participant, maybe do a little bit of small talk at the start, and try to avoid being quite like rigid and, you know, just like, hello, this is the user test. Like, this is what we're going to do. It's much, much more productive to set the scene, be friendly, because people will be a lot more open. Then in some instances, you might want to give them a bit of a form to sign to make sure that they allow you to use the data, like to use for your product. If you're recording it, make sure that you get consent for users to be recorded and that you have the necessary kind of software or hardware to do that recording. And yeah, as we said about kind of setting the scene, it's really, really good to have some questions to break the ice. Like, you know, in usual interviews, the tell me about yourself is, I don't know, a classic. But it helps a lot to pick on things that maybe you have in common and like chat a little bit afterwards to make them feel comfortable. After which you just ask them to complete the tasks you have for them. So as Lauren said, these tasks ideally are quite example specific, like the tickets she was mentioning. And at the end, the same way you kind of like set the scene and made them feel comfortable, equally try to end it in a friendly and positive way, thanking them for the time. If you are doing snowball testing, maybe asking them if they recommend anyone else to join you and giving them all the details they need to claim the incentives that you have promised them for the user testing session.
Yeah, that's great. And after running the user test as well, that's when you have step six, which is really to analyze, go through the findings and share them with your wider team. So one of the books that I was reading in preparation for this as well as user testing on my own project was Rocket Surgery Made Easy by Steve Krug, which is a really helpful resource for how to plan in-person user testing, for how to plan moderated user testing. And one of the things that Steve Krug recommends really is to try and make it almost like a collaborative exercise. In the book, he actually recommends getting other people not in the room to shadow the moderated user testing session as well. So if you're the facilitator and running it, if you're a participant, try and set up the audio in a way so that everyone can kind of listen in or take part. Obviously, this is not always going to be relevant or applicable to remote user testing, but the benefit of making this a collaborative exercise is that everyone in your team can kind of have an insight into what some of the most serious usability problems are identified by participants. But if you're not able to do this, you can go through basically the user testing script and the data that you've collected from the testing session and try and identify the top three usability problems. You might also want to share these resources with other people in your team and ask them independently to list what they think the three most serious usability problems are, so that you kind of have a list as a team to work through. And it's almost a bit like design thinking, where everyone kind of writes down their individual thoughts or insights and then comes together and starts like clustering them to find out what the common patterns and usability problems are. And at the end of this, you should have a list of the top 10 usability problems that you want to fix on your product. If your team members aren't able to make the usability sessions, you can still share the session recordings with them, subject to the consent of your participants. But this is a good way to try and share the findings with the wider team and just kind of come up with a prioritized list of usability problems that you can work on, which then sets the direction for your team. Apart from these steps, something else that I thought was quite interesting was when I was reading Rocket Surgery Made Easy, the model that Steve Krug advocates for is continuous user testing, where you basically set aside 1 week every month or just a couple of days within your agile development sprint if you're working in an agile environment. And you just essentially like line user tests up for this period of time. And by blocking that time out in your calendar, it just really increases the likelihood that you are going to be running user tests on a regular basis and almost kind of makes it part of your product development cycle. So I just thought that was quite interesting. Personally, I've not been, I think, in an environment where we've had the chance to run like continuous user tests, but this is something that I'm definitely very interested in and probably something to take note of as well. If you're going to be running user tests on a regular basis, it might be just helpful to block that time out like every month or every couple of weeks to run user tests. Aside from those steps that we've mentioned, we just wanted to share a few extra resources that we've found really helpful for helping us increase our knowledge of user testing and running moderated user tests. So I did mention that book by Steve Krug that I've read quite a lot, and I highly recommend it also because it just really breaks down how to run moderated usability tests. And also gives lots of sample templates and resources, such as checklists and also examples of what to include in your moderated usability testing script. So yeah, I think it's a great resource. And I also found this article by Hotjar, which is really good. It's called 12 Usability Testing Templates. Or actually the full article name is 12 Templates and Checklists to Get You Started with Usability Testing. And it has tons of resources, which range from, you know, templates for usability test plan to your checklist on Nielsen Norman Group's website for how to plan out your usability studies, some resources on how to write effective usability tasks as well. So we'll go ahead and pop that in the show notes. And another one that I've seen before, it's only 7 minutes long, and one that we love on the pod is actually a YouTube video by Google Ventures about how to run a moderated user test. And it's run by someone who's really experienced, and they just kind of show you, you know, like the best way to put your participants at ease and take them through the usability testing script. So again, we can link that in the show notes. But if anyone's interested, it's called How to Do Your User Interview, bracket from Google Ventures Updated. And it's on YouTube. It's probably one of the first results.
Amazing. So Louise, I hope that helped to answer your question, based on some of our experiences, but then also some of those extra special resources. And if you've got a question you'd like to ask the podcast host, you can submit it at anchor.fm/hotlinedesignpod. You can find us on Instagram at hotlinedesignpod and then Gmail, hotlinedesignpod@gmail.com. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
We're sorry. You have reached a number that has been disconnected. Please check the number and try your call again.